Hi, I'm Michelle Lieber, Global Head of Government Affairs and Regulatory Strategy for FactSet. Welcome to the FactSet Insight Podcast. I'm so lucky today to have a friend of mine, Hugh Halpern, join us. He is currently the Director of the Government Publishing Office here in Washington, D.C. And prior to that, we met a long time ago, although it feels like just yesterday. We met when Hugh worked on Capitol Hill. First, as the parliamentarian in the House of Financial Services Committee. Welcome, Hugh.
Thanks so much for having me, Michelle. I am so excited to be here.
So, I wanted to just start a little bit with your past as a congressional staffer and talk a little bit about what led you to become the parliamentarian in the House Financial Services Committee and what was important to you about that role, kind of in helping to form your career.
Sure. My first real exposure to Washington was as a high school senior. I was here with the Close Up Foundation, and I remember sitting in the gallery, and we were there in the middle of a vote, and I was like, someday I'd like to work down there. And so I came to DC as a college freshman the following year, and I got recruited by my local congressman to be sort of the driver, intern, gopher, sort of jack of all trades. And when I finished my undergrad degree, I moved over to the Energy and Commerce Committee. And a few short years later, Republicans were in the majority for the first time in more than 40 years. And nobody kind of knew what they were doing. So I had some policy issues that I was responsible for, but one of the things was I developed a both an interest and proclivity for understanding the procedural mechanics of how Congress worked. So I developed that during my time at Energy and Commerce, serving the second half of my time there as the parliamentarian of that committee. And when they created the Financial Services Committee, I had been close friends with Mike Oxley and a lot of his staff, and they asked me to come over to serve initially as their parliamentarian, then their general counsel.
Did you realize at the time that you were actually going to be part of creating one of the seminal pieces of modern financial legislation in Sarbanes-Oxley? Or did it feel just like you were doing something that you had to do to get it done?
It's more the latter. It's so much of what I did really didn't focus on the policy. It was focused on how do we get this done? Somebody else is making the policy call, and my job was to figure out the plays that could get it across the goal line. And that was the same time I got pulled in to work on the bill that created the Department of Homeland Security. So I was really doing two jobs at the time that Sarbanes-Oxley came along. And from there, frankly, the House leadership noticed me. And probably around 2005 or so, I became staff director, the chief staff person for the House Rules Committee. And that's the entity that on behalf of the speaker, sort of runs the House day to day.
Let's talk about the Rules Committee for a minute because I do think it's important, given that we just had a huge piece of legislation pass Congress last week. It was enacted into law, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And it's a little bit different in how that happened versus kind of when you were working in Congress and you had legislation moving through comparable to Sarbanes-Oxley, which still is the law of the land, and others. So, do you want to talk a little bit about the difference between your time at the Rules Committee and in Congress in general and now?
Sure. I think one of the things that we've seen is a continuing drive where more and more of these decisions about individual policies are getting made at the leadership level. Whereas during the time I was at the Financial Services Committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee before that, a lot more of those decisions were being made at the committee level. Now, that's something that frankly started in 95 with Newt Gingrich, and it's really continued today under leaderships of both parties. You know, one of the differences, though, between today and most of my time in the House was the size of the majority in the House. So today we have very, very thin margins. As close as we came to that 2 or 3 seat majority was really in that 2005-2006 era, where we had the Republicans had a 5 seat majority. And we had things then that we don't have now. So I always point to Majority Whip and Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who was very, very persuasive with recalcitrant members. excuse me. And can usually find a way to get them to yes, no matter how much they wanted to be no. Many of the tools that he used back then, whether it was earmarks, whether it was access to party apparatus for advertising and things like that, for better or for worse, that's a lot more democratized now. So anybody can have access to that through social media or other avenues. And so the job became much more difficult, both during my time at the Rules Committee and then for my last few years where I served as Speaker Ryan's floor director. I ran the House floor for Speaker Ryan during the time we considered the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which was the predecessor to the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Right. And so, I mean, that's an interesting point you make. One of the things I think that people don't realize is how much procedure goes into getting these bills across the finish line, right? And there's a whole bunch of congressional procedure that has to be maintained, people like you running the floor and making sure that things move smoothly in order to be ultimately enacted into law.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things to keep in mind, particularly for something like the One Big Beautiful Bill or the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, where we were focused on the reconciliation process, I keep pointing out to folks, reconciliation is 100% about the Senate. The House, it doesn't matter. The House is a majoritarian institution. Whoever has 50% plus one wins day in, day out. That's not the same in the Senate. So much of what you had to do in the House was make sure that whatever it was that you were sending to the Senate complied with all of their rules and was structured in a way that they could deal with it so that you could get to that final product. And along the way, you've got to deal with your own issues. You've got to make sure that all of those individual factions feel like they've had an opportunity to be heard, have been able to put their stamp on things. Frankly, I spent a lot of my time managing hurt feelings and having to deliver bad news to people that no, whatever your particular policy thing was that you wanted, that's just not going to happen today.
Well, all of your institutional knowledge, which clearly is evident, has led you to this new role or relatively new role where you're in charge of the government publishing office. And in this role, one of your mandates, from what I've read, is to really make sure that things become digitized and user-friendly for the folks that are using it. So do you want to talk a little bit about your philosophy on the importance of machine-readable data and the ability to utilize that data?
Sure. And maybe a better way to look at this is to step back a second, because I'm the first head of GPO that was actually a GPO customer. And to be 100% frank, I wasn't always a happy customer. Being on the other side, you can easily see the demands that Congress and some of our other customers put on GPO. And it's a miracle that GPO can keep pulling these rabbits out of the hats. But one of the things that I learned when I was on the Hill was a lot of the mechanics of how the bill became a law, not the interpersonal dynamics of how do you build a coalition and build the votes and things like that, but it's how do you draft that piece of legislation? What are the tools you're going to use to do that? And how do you get that to a final product? So to sort of step back, GPO has been producing documents for Congress since the Civil War. That's why it was created. And we've been on the same location, just probably about 6 or 7 blocks from the Capitol since 1862. Today, GPO is a $1.3 billion, almost quasi-commercial enterprise inside the legislative branch. And while most of our work isn't congressionally related, congressional work is really some of the most important work we do. So let's take a member who has a bill. They want to put a stoplight on Main Street or whatever the topic is. They're gonna write out that concept on a legal pad or whatever, and then they're gonna go to these attorneys in the House Office of Legislative Counsel. They're the folks who turn those ideas into proposed law. Well, they use an editor that uses structured data. That's been the case since probably the early 2000s. And Congress has its own flavor of XML called USLM, United States Legislative Markup. And they'll draft in that structured data. When they get ready to produce that final document, I always talk about when that attorney hits Control P to get a printout of that, our software takes over. Now, here's the problem. Our software originally came online when I was 12. I am a long, long way from 12. So that software we have kept running with Band-Aids and baling wire and bolting on pieces ever since. And so what we do is we take that good structured data, revert it to GPO's typesetting codes, and then Adobe does some magic in the background, and you get a PDF at the end of the day. We're actually in the middle of shifting software platforms, so there will be a true end-to-end XML structured data-based process. So you draft in structured data, and you can output all the way to PDF or display that on a web page without ever having to change the underlying coding of that document.
And will that be transferable to various government agencies? So you'll be able to, yeah.
Absolutely. That's one of the big advantages of having a structured data format is that, people way smarter than I am, probably more steeped in things than you are, can actually figure out new applications for this same data. So let's take an appropriations bill where you've got all of these figures and provisos and things like that. If you're in a structured data format, it's easy for somebody to script something that can take the data that's in that document and move that into a spreadsheet where it's more easily maneuverable. Frankly, you can use some of the AI agents that are out there, and after a couple of examples, they'll get pretty good at being able to do that. There are a lot of applications out there that I can't think of and you can't think of, but other smart people can use these data formats and extract all of this information out into a way that's usable, repurposable, and all of those kinds of things. And we really, really want to push that forward. And that's why we're really excited that hopefully by the end of this year, beginning of next calendar year, we're going to be rolling out the new iteration of this software so that folks will start seeing a difference with bills, resolutions, and amendments. And then we'll move on to different document types, whether it's committee reports or the congressional record or things like that on down the line.
Well, that'll be great because we'll be able to actually put that into other tools that we'll be able to use to be able to track the information going forward and do some of my, what I use it all the time for regulatory reporting and to make sure that we have all of the information available in one format. That's great news.
Absolutely. Or comparing versions of documents as things move through the legislative process. These are all things that are going to be much easier in sort of this new era.
One thing I wanted to just follow up on is, you know, we're very focused in the financial data space on the Financial Data Transparency Act that was implemented by Congress in 2022 and its implementation. One of the things that we've seen in the financial space is that in order to communicate between regulatory agencies and to regulatory agencies, folks are using all different types of formats and PDFs and things that are not machine readable. So I think that we're all on the same page here in terms of getting data to be structured, machine readable, and interoperable. And I think that that sounds like some of the important work that you guys are doing at the government publishing office as well.
Absolutely. And it's a little bit of a struggle for us because we have to be able to maintain all of the different modes that our congressional customers operate in. You know, when I ran the floor, when I was at the Rules Committee, I used to joke that my most powerful tool, even though I had really powerful computers and printers and software and all that stuff sitting on my desk, my single most powerful tool was my red and blue pencil, because I could walk over to the paper copy, because that's the copy of record. And if we needed to make a change, we could just hand write that change in. And then somebody here at GPO later would look at that document and go, oh, I need to update the file to reflect that change. We're still in that mode. We still need to be able to support the member who writes a bill in longhand, and then GPO needs to be able to turn that into data. And that's always going to be a requirement, and it's always going to be a long-term obligation on GPO's part.
It sounds like you guys are doing some really amazing work at GPO, and it's really been a pleasure to get to have you talk with us today. I could talk to you all day, but I'm really grateful. Please feel free to take a look at the podcast. Is FactSet Insight Podcast available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, we're so grateful to have you here, Hugh Halpern, joining us today to talk a little bit about what goes into all the important work you're doing at the Government Publishing Office. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Michelle, and it was great joining you.
The FactSet Insight podcast is for informational purposes only. The information contained within is not legal, tax, or investment advice. FactSet does not endorse or recommend any investments and assumes no liability for any consequence relating directly or indirectly to any action or inaction taken based on the information contained in this podcast episode. The views shared by third-party contributors do not necessarily reflect the opinion of FactSet.